Good morning, this is Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners. This morning I'm talking to Melody Groves about her many, many books. Good morning, Melody.
Good morning.
I enjoyed so much reading She Was Sheriff. I just got such a kick out of it.
Yeah, it's a fun book, isn't it?
Yeah. But the characters are really well developed. I mean, I knew Maud. I really could get into her head.
Oh, good.
So why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a synopsis about this book, and we'll talk about your others as we go along.
Okay. This book is set in Northern California, 1872, and is totally different from my others, which are set in southern Arizona, southern New Mexico, around right before the Civil War. And I have no idea why I set She Was Sheriff in California in 1872. I've got no clue. It just appeared, so I kept it. And the idea behind it is Maud Overstreet is a 30-something spinster who does not want to be a spinster in a small town of 380 people, I think it is, in Dry Creek, California. Now, Dry Creek is made up, but some of the other places are not. And the town is looking to, the town fathers, councilmen, are trying to drum up some business because nothing's going on in this little tiny town. So they decide, and this is kind of off camera, they decide that they need something to interest the people to come into town and buy stuff. So about that time, their old sheriff had gone fishing and didn't bother to come back. And so the town councilor said, well, hey, let's get Maud to be sheriff, at least for a while. And people will come in and look at her. And then while they're in town, they'll go to the restaurant and heck, they'll go to the feed store and they'll spend some money and they'll go get a beer. Heck, so they finally convinced her to be sheriff just until election time when a real sheriff could be elected. So that's the start of the story. And then, of course, she has no idea about anything. She does not know how to ride a horse because her pa is the bank president, and she's never had to ride a horse. She's always had a buggy, and you know, she kind of, not spoiled exactly, but was not one of these people. She does not know how to shoot a gun. She's never been into a saloon. And as sheriff, of course, she has to do all of that stuff. And then, of course, the bank gets robbed. And so she has to go after all these bad guys. All the time she's waiting for the guy she knows is going to come sweeping her off her feet and going to get married, Eli.
Right.
And so she keeps waiting for him, and it's just a hilarious romp through the gold rush era. So that's what I'll say about that.
Yes, it's really fun, especially when she tries to get on the horse for the first time with a skirt. I love that scene.
Right. Yeah. One thing I try to do is remind the readers that she's wearing a skirt.
Yes.
As she was the sort that no way was she going to wear pants because you just didn't wear pants.
Right. Or show an ankle.
Oh, no. Don't show an ankle.
No. It was very clever. And the other books, you have a lot of books.
So I have nine.
Nine of them total. Great.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about the Colton Brothers saga.
The Colton Brothers saga it's just been a whale of a lot of fun to write. I started off, there's five books out in that series, and the sixth one is being rewritten, spiffed up at Five Star Publishing, so that's why I'm going five, six, I can't remember. It'll be coming out hopefully in a year, year and a half.
Great.
Of course, if I had it to do, I would have it out like yesterday, but, you know, the publishers don't work just for me. It's four brothers, the Colton brothers. There's four of them. They range anywhere from the age of, it starts off with Andy, the youngest, is 16. Trace, the oldest, is early 20s. and the two boys, two of the boys are in between. It's just four boys. There's no girls involved. And they're originally from Kansas, but Trace, the oldest, and James, the second one, the second oldest, have moved out to Mesilla, where Trace is the driver for Butterfield Stage Line.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a series of adventures and misadventures. And then the youngest of the boys, Andy, he comes from Kansas to help James. The boys, the older two, had been captured in one of the books, captured by Cochise, and James just is really trying to deal with that. It's like today's PTSD, only back in, you know, nobody called it that back in the
right.
1860s. And so Andy comes in to help James figure it out. In the meantime, James kills a sheriff, and life is not good, so the judge says, listen, tell you what, you can either go to jail or you can join the army, the Confederate or the Union army, either one, it doesn't matter, but you won't be here. So James decides to join the Union army, and James and Andy end up going all the way to Yuma, Arizona, which Yuma was the westernmost place where Confederates and Union army actually met. I mean, so I have a lot of history in these books.
Right.
And then they ended up, I wanted to get them to the Battle of Picacho Pass, which is kind of halfway between Phoenix and Tucson. And there was a battle there, and most historians, a lot of historians, consider that the westernmost battle of the Civil War. So I wanted to get my guys out there, and
mm-hmm.
and sure enough, they participated in it, and well, I think that was in book two. And then, you know, we go farther on, and one of the books is called Kansas Bleeds. Luke, brother number three, is, he's kind of the bad boy of the group. He doesn't believe in what the family does, and so this is during 1863, and he decides to ride with William Quantrell, who, of course, is not a really nice guy. And Luke thinks that slavery is an okay idea. You know, mm-hmm. why not? Because everybody needs slaves. What's the deal? And his family is like, no, you're thinking wrong. And he goes, oh, yeah, well, watch this. So, yeah, he's a real scoundrel. He
yeah.
really is. And then in, let's see, Black Range Revenge, which came out earlier this year, Andy, the fourth brother, ends up going up to the Black Range around Maguillon, Silver City. That area has some misadventures, and goes looking for gold. Doesn't actually find it. What he discovers is that the most important thing and most precious thing he's got is his family. So he struggles to get back to his family.
Very good. Well, I'm really impressed with how many books you write. You've also written several nonfiction books about
mm-hmm.
Butterfield's Byway and historic bars of the Southwest
right.
and the rodeo.
Rodeo, uh-huh.
And you also write articles for True Rep West and other magazines.
I do.
So do you write the Colton brothers straight through, or do you write one and then take a break and write something else? And where does She Was Sheriff fit in there?
She Was Sheriff fit in between Kansas Bleeds and Black Range Revenge.
Mm.
Sometimes I overlap the books, but as I'm getting older, I'm finding that I can only do one at a time,
yeah.
which aggravates me because I think I should be able to do a multitask.
Oh,
in the
yes.
true sense of the word. But what I find that I can do is I can write one of my novels and work on something nonfiction, whether it's a book or a magazine article. I can do that.
Ah.
So that's what I do. I shift gears during a single day. I guess it's partly a lack of attention. You know, I get
right.
after a couple of hours doing fiction, it's like, okay, we need something else. Let's do nonfiction.
That's very good. But you also have other things that you do. I see that you're a gunfighter and a guitarist.
Right, right. Now, the gunfighting, I don't perform anymore. I've taken a leave of absence, so to speak. I was a New Mexico gunfighter for 10 years. And we were down in Old Town, and then we would go out around New Mexico when people would ask us to come perform. And we always did fun skits, you know, the dumb sheriff, or I don't know, just all sorts of different things. You know, of course, they're still going strong. I mean, they've Gunfighters have now been around 35 years, something like that. But after 10 years, what I discovered was, again, getting older, which, I had no problem when I was shot, and I loved being the bad guy. That was my favorite thing of all. Me and my posse come down the street, you know, we would harass the dumb deputy and the sheriff, and we'd have this great shootout, and then, of course, I died. You know, I hit the ground. And, well, I didn't have a problem hitting the ground. That was not, well, and the asphalt, which in the summer is darn hot.
Mm.
I didn't have a problem with that, but I discovered I had a little problem getting up. And, you know, I'm sitting there, lying there, thinking, this is really embarrassing. Here I'm supposed to be this big, bad gunfighter, and I can't get up. Yeah. So I kind of said, gee, let me just take a little bit of time here, and maybe I'll be back. And I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned so much being a gunfighter. That I use it in my novels a lot.
I was just going to say, that's what informed you with mod picking and learning guns.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene that I hope you enjoyed in there, because I laughed all the way through writing it, was Maud is learning how to shoot a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor, which she's kind of sweet on, comes up behind her and puts his arms around her and goes, okay, here's what you do. And it's a double barrel shotgun.
Right.
And he says, whatever you do. Yeah, I see you're laughing.
I am.
He says, whatever you do, don't pull both triggers. Well, she does.
Mm-hmm.
And she lands on top of him, knocks him out. Well, that was taken from an actual event when all of us gunfighters were off at one of our gunfighters' ranches one day. We were just plunking out there with live ammunition this time. And we had a shotgun, a double-barrel shotgun, and one of our gunfighters was a pretty tiny young lady. And so her husband, who was big, he still is, he was telling her, he goes, don't pull both barrels. You're going to regret this. And she goes, okay. And so she didn't knock him down, but when she pulled both triggers, she went flying backwards.
Uh-oh.
Ended up on the ground, and then you should have seen the bruise on her shoulder.
Oh.
That was a righteous bruise, I tell you. So I thought, I have to include that in my book.
Oh, it's a very funny scene.
I'm glad it wasn't me.
No kidding. Maud was a little distracted when Seth was trying to help her.
Yep.
That was great. Well, do you have something you want to read for our audience?
I could. I thought the first chapter of Black Range Revenge starts with a lot of tension, and it's short.
Okay.
So I thought I would do that, if that's okay with you.
That's great. I did read that, and I love it, so please do.
Oh, good. Okay. This is chapter one, September 1863, Black Range Mountains, Southwestern New Mexico Territory. Like every other morning for the past month, he'd crawled out of his canvas tent, slurped a cup of what passed for coffee, bitter in black water, and went to work. Pan in the water, slosh, 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 pull it out, inspect, more water, slosh, slosh, slosh. Until 5 minutes ago. Gunfire, whoops and screams shattered the symphony of chattering birds and gurgling water. Hunkered down behind a rock, a juniper bush covering him, he held his breath and listened hard over the flutter of dried leaves stirred by a light breeze. He sent pleas heavenward. Would this be the day he died? Now shallow spurts, his breathing matched his gaze as it darted from tree to bush to rock and back. Muscles wound until he knew they'd coil in on themselves. At least they would let him run the 100 miles back to Mesilla if he could. Would his hiding place protect him? He had heard about the Warm Springs Apaches and their retaliation for the January murder of their leader, Mangus Coloradus. But they had already wiped out the camp of Birchville twice earlier this year. Wasn't that enough? Enraged Apaches had slaughtered innocent men, enraged rightfully so. But was murder the answer? Screams, more screams, some closer, others fading. Grateful to have set up camp a mile from the others, Andy Colton hoped he'd chosen a spot far enough away. He cringed, squeezing his eyes closed, then realized he'd have to stay vigilant. They opened. Off to his left, branches snapped. Couldn't be his horse. She was hobbled farther at the creek, out of sight, he hoped. How small could he make himself? He plastered his body against the boulder, tucked in his arms, and curled in tight. Hooves pushed fallen leaves aside, a few crinkling under the weight. Slow, methodical clip-clops inches away. He braced himself for a knife or arrow to slash through his muscles and perhaps end his life. Even if the juniper covered him, he knew the Indian would be able to hear his heart pound. Andy tried to swallow, but only the acidic taste of fear filled his mouth. Fallen leaves being spread apart by hooves, the sound slowed, then stopped. Did he dare peek around the corner? No. Movement of any kind would prove fatal. The sound began again, this time moving away from Andy. He waited until he heard nothing. No birds, no small critters scurrying from brush, not even screams from camp. Licking his lips and taking a deep breath, he uncurled and peeked around the boulder. No Apache waiting. Should he leave his hiding place, his boulder? He wanted to stay, needed to stay until dark at least, but his legs said otherwise. Andy unfolded like a caterpillar emerging from a cocoon, his long legs grateful for freedom. He brought his body up to its full height, then sprinted for an aspen. How its narrow trunk and leaves above his head would serve as protection, he knew was pointless, but standing against it gave him more security. Waiting, listening, he cocked his head. Again, no sounds. He knew what that meant. It wouldn't be pretty, but as a survivor, it was his obligation. Help the wounded, dead, and dying. He blew out air, gave one last look, and started for camp.
Very good. That is very tense setting. Yep. And how old is Andy here?
He is 18.
18 years old.
Wow. Actually, just about 18.
Wow. So I noticed that so many of your books are set during, you know, this time frame. Why is that?
Well, kind of interesting. I didn't do it on purpose, but I did do it on purpose.
Okay.
Pre-Civil War, I grew up in Las Cruces, you know, down in southern New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
And a mile from Mesilla. And every time I'd wander over there, there was a stagecoach there, and they talked about Butterfield. There was a couple plaques, and I always wondered what the deal was. And then as I got older, I realized that Butterfield was a stagecoach company that was the longest mail route at one time in the world. And it was an amazing, phenomenal thing to have happen to our country.
Mm-hmm.
So as I started writing, I thought, well, that would be great. I'll use Butterfield. Why not? So I put my guys on the stagecoach and off we went. And I started writing and frankly, not doing a whole lot of research. I just kind of went charging along. And then I thought, okay, well, we'll go to Deming. We'll go to Lordsburg. Oh, wait, they weren't there. They didn't come in until 1881.
Nope.
Well, that causes a problem. So where do my guys stop? Well, they stop at the stagecoach stops is where they go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I stumbled into that time frame. I probably would not have done that because there were so many things that New Mexico, especially southern New Mexico, didn't have. You know, towns, for one thing.
Right, right.
Decent transportation. Right. Lots of stuff we didn't have. And it made it hard to write, frankly.
Mm.
But I persevered because I wanted Butterfield in there. So that's what happened with that.
So did the book about the Butterfield Byway come to be through the research for the fiction, or which came first?
It came because of the research of the fiction.
That's
absolutely
really exciting.
Mm-hmm. And I had so much information there's an interesting story about that. Anyway, I had so much information about Butterfield.
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking, I should write a book. And yet I was involved in my fiction. I'm going, yeah, right. So a few years ago, I had gone to a Western Writers of America convention in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we had done a huge book signing. About 60 of us authors had done a book signing. And I remember this woman, it was at a Barnes & Noble, had come in and she was looking through my Historic Bars book, and we talked about it, but she didn't buy it, which kind of surprised me, but okay, that's fine. So I get home on Monday. Tuesday morning, I get a phone call from HistoryNet, which has now combined with Arcadia Publishing, but at that time they were two different places, two different publishers. And this guy says, my boss was looking through your book on Bars and was wondering if you would like to write for us.
Oh, okay.
And I, you know, and I've always been on the other side about, you know, please, 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 can, you know, would you publish my book? And this time they're asking me to write one. And
that's great.
Yeah, and the guy says, well, do you happen to have, you know, anything that you can think of? Oh, yeah.
I just might.
Oh, yeah. I had actually written it up as a proposal for another publisher and just didn't deal with it. I just, you know, I just got lazy. So I had it ready to go.
Wow.
So I polished it up and sent it off in a couple of days. And then the next week I get this phone call, and the same guy says, we had this staff meeting, because they have these meetings from editors from all over the country who work for HistoryNet, and they said, we just have one question for you. And I said, geez. And he goes, it isn't if we should publish this book. Absolutely we should. But the question is, why hasn't it been done before?
Oh.
And I didn't want to tell him I was lazy. That I didn't think that was a good idea. So I said, I guess it was waiting for the right publisher.
Oh, good answer.
You know, something camp like that. It's like, oh, yeah.
Very good. Yes.
So that's how that came to be.
Oh, I love those stories. Very good for you.
And then on top of that, I went to every year I go to Western Writers of America convention. And this year, just almost a month ago, we were up in Billings, Montana. And I talked to the editor of Two Dot Publishing that does just Western nonfiction. And I tossed three ideas about different nonfiction books out to the editor, and she likes all three. So right now I'm working up the proposal, you know, the table of contents.
Mm-hmm.
And she already gave me titles, and she wants me to write a couple of chapters ahead of time. But so I'm thinking, why did I ask for this? It's now three books. It's like, ah.
Be careful what you wish for. Yes.
That's right.
So you've been mentioning you're a member of Western Writers of America. You're also with Southwest Writers.
Yes.
So it's important to you to be part of a writers group.
It really is. I think writers groups, the right ones, are absolutely invaluable. Everything that I've done with success has been through Southwest Writers and or through Western Writers of America. Southwest Writers is where I was asked if I would join Western Writers of America.
Oh.
And it's where my very first book that came out was my Ropes, Reins, and Rawhide All About Rodeo book.
Mm-hmm.
It was published by the University of New Mexico Press. And the way that came about was I had sent the editor-in-chief a query letter with my chapters and da-da-da-da-da. And within 4 days, I got a rejection letter.
Wow.
And I thought that was kind of odd because rodeo is really big in New Mexico. So as it turned out, that evening at Southwest Writers was a talk by Tony Hillerman. And Tony's really good friend was the editor of UNM Press.
Ah.
This guy named Luther Wilson. So I go to the meeting, and everybody, at the end of his talk, everybody is swarming Tony Hillerman. Well, poor Luther Wilson standing over on the side by himself. I went over and talked to him. He's the one I wanted to go see.
Right.
So I told him, I said, you know, this just got rejected very quickly. And he goes, well, who did that? I said, well, I don't know, but the rejection is the important part. And he goes, send it to me. I want to look at it. He goes, yeah, we need a book like that.
Wow.
Well, I didn't know at the time, but one of his really good friends was a bull rider. So I was like, dude. So I didn't send it in. The next day, I took it to his office and handed it to him.
Very good.
He said, you're not getting away from me.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Did you used to ride rodeo?
I did not ride in rodeo itself. I had been headed for a rodeo career, I thought, and turns out I really, in retrospect, I really didn't know what I was doing. I was going to be a barrel racer. And then I discovered that this friend of mine had two horses, and we used to go riding. And one day we got lazy again and did not bother to saddle the horses and went around that first barrel, what they call the money barrel, and I slid right off the horse and rolled into the fence.
Oh.
And went, you know, this hurts. I don't think I want to do this.
I think I'll write about it instead.
And then I moved overseas, and then that was kind of that with that. But about, oh my goodness, about 15 years ago, I got it. I just became obsessed with rodeo, in particular bull riding.
Mm.
Oh my goodness gracious. Oh, I lived it. I breathed it. I just, everything I did was rodeo. So I found a bull riding school up in Denver.
Oh my gosh.
And I contacted the guy, and he says, well, you know, okay, how old are you? And I went, well, oh, issue. And he says, well, I tell you what, come on up, and if you don't get on a bull, he goes, I'll refund you some of your money. He goes, but, you know, it'll be fine. I'm going, okay. So up I go. And it was 3 days, and I actually went twice, so a total of 6 days. And I got on a bull, and the story behind that is hilarious. But I had never worn a helmet. I had never been on a bull. I really didn't know what I was doing, although they had given us a day of instruction before they let any of us. There were, I guess, maybe 15 in this class. I was the oldest and, of course, the only girl. The next oldest was 36, and I was much older than that. And probably the youngest was about 14.
Oh.
So, and they all took care of me. It was really cute, like the token mom. But I got on that bull, and
well, good for you.
It was amazing.
Wow.
I ended up, between the 6 days I went, I ended up getting on 5 bulls.
Wow.
And I fell off of all of them. I would like to say I was thrown off. I might have been semi-bucked off of one, but I pretty much fell off of the others. But I was on there for 2, 3, 4 seconds.
Well, good for you. That's great.
Until I got hurt.
I was going to say, that has to hurt too.
Yeah, the first time I got a really nasty concussion, and it took me a couple of years to get over it, to where I could remember numbers again.
Wow.
And then the second time I went up, it was about a year or two later, after the first one, I went up by myself, and this is up to Denver, and here we are in Albuquerque, so I drove up by myself.
Wow.
And ended up pulling some muscles out of my back, to right under my left shoulder blade, to where I couldn't turn right. I could only turn left.
Oh, dear.
And I couldn't get a sweater or a coat on by myself.
Oh, my gosh.
It was pretty funny. I limped around, and it took about 3 years to truly heal those muscles. And, of course, being older, don't heal quite as fast. But it was, you know, if I was younger and male, that's where I would be.
Mm. The thrill of the rodeo.
I would be in rodeo. Oh, bull riding. Oh, yeah.
Wow. That is so exciting.
Oh, it's just amazingly exciting.
Wow. And you play the guitar, too?
I play guitar. I play rhythm guitar and tambourine on occasion.
Very good.
Tambourine's hard to play and sing at the same time.
I can only imagine.
But I've been in the Jammy Time band now for 7 years. I think we've been together 7 years.
Well, that's really exciting. You're multi-talented. And speaking of time, we are almost out of time.
Uh-oh.
Why don't you give the listeners your website address so they can find your books there?
Oh, that's a great idea. It is. It's really hard. Melody, M-E-L-O-D-Y, Groves, G-R-O-V-E-S, .net.
Okay.
.net. That's all there is.
MelodyGroves.net. Great.
Yes, ma'am.
And they can go there and find your books and all about you.
Yes. Yes. And places I will be appearing and talks I will be giving. And I would just like to make a shout-out for everyone who supports local authors. That's such a huge deal. And I can speak for everybody when I say we really appreciate you buying and reading our material.
Well, thank you very much, Melody. And that was Melody Groves talking about her many books, nonfiction, fiction, and her other many activities, all related to Western living. This has been Tracy Hales-Vass at Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington. You can contact me at writeon@sanjuancollege.edu.